From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Nearly half of teenage deaths in Iowa result from car crashes, so the state legislature is debating a host of new driving restrictions for 16 and 17-year-olds, including an earlier curfew, limits on the number of passengers, and additional seatbelt requirements. Lawmakers are also considering a ban on texting while driving, which would apply to everyone. Will this make our roads safer, or is Iowa becoming a nanny state? This hour, we discuss the merits of these proposals with lawmakers, researchers, and healthcare professionals, and we hope to hear from you. That's coming up next on The Exchange, but first, the news. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Today, we're discussing several components of legislation aimed at making Iowa's interstates and highways and roadways safer by restricting driving, whether it's for teenage drivers or all of us when it comes to texting. We're going to discuss this legislation with Republican Representative Dave Jepkes of Gowrie, the ranking Republican on the House Transportation Committee, and Democratic Senator Bill Heckroth of Waverly, who is a member of the Senate Transportation Committee. I want to start with the texting legislation because, Representative, that could come up for full House debate as early as tomorrow or Wednesday. And when this came out of committee, House File 2021, it was a 20-to-1 vote in the Transportation Committee. And what it does is prohibit text messaging while driving. However, it does not prohibit text messaging or reading a text while driving. You just can't send one. Tell me the thought process behind this legislation. Did this come to you from a constituent or a concern?
The whole bill was kind of a give and take in the process of developing where we're at today. And that included members of our own caucus, members of the opposite caucus. And we went back and forth on a lot of different components. And this is where basically it came from. The main concern that we've been hearing about is the time span that it takes to send the message and to type the message. And that's where we wanted our focus to be on.
The Des Moines Register had a story today, though, raising the concern that if the ban is solely on sending the message and not also reading a message, that this might not be strict enough and that future federal highway money may be restricted and the federal government may say, you know what, we're not sending you your full cut if you don't enact stronger legislation. Are you concerned about that?
Not really, because that happens all the time in all different types of legislation that the federal government passes that has an impact on state. If the federal government does pass a law, and by the way, it is not a federal law as of today, it's merely a proposal. So if the feds do pass a law, then we have plenty of time to make whatever corrections necessary to comply with that. And that's not without precedence. A couple years ago, we had the same issue when Iowa's blood alcohol level for driving while intoxicated was 0.10, and then the federal government passed a 0.08, and then we had several years to get in compliance with that. And that was no major challenge, and I don't anticipate any problem whatsoever with that.
And in fact, you know, that example that you cited, we didn't do it as a state until that money was truly on the line. That was the pressure it took to get Iowa to make that change. Do you think that we almost need the pressure from the federal government to make the texting ban stricter than the current proposal?
No, I don't really. I think the Iowa legislature, and we've been going back and forth, you know, we've been talking about distracted drivers for quite some time. And I think in the last year or so, when we started getting the full impact of texting, that kind of went over the edge. So the whole engine driving this is not what the federal government is going to do or whatever. This comes from Iowa legislators and from Iowa citizens and our concerns that we have for public safety in this state. I don't think we need the federal government to necessarily tell us what is a good law and not a good law in the state of Iowa. I think we can figure that out quite well ourselves.
That Register article I mentioned cites research from the Federal Motor Safety or the Motor Carrier Safety Administration, which shows drivers who send and receive text messages take their eyes off the road for an average of 4.5 or 6 seconds while texting, and that at 55 miles an hour, a driver would travel the length of a football field, including end zones, without looking at the road. You're a former state trooper, retired state trooper. You hear something like that, what goes through your mind?
Well, that's one of the main reasons why I had the bill drafted because of that concern. As I said earlier, you know, that we've been talking about distracted drivers for the last couple of years, and you can get into all kinds of areas of what is a distraction. But I think when you got to the texting and the time element that you alluded to and the serious potential that all these studies, and especially a study from the University of Iowa, also underscored that point, along with National Highway Safety Council. We have all kinds of studies that support the need. And the main thing with distracted drivers or any traffic laws, you have to get the motoring public to accept that as a reasonable and responsible thing to do. And so I think there's virtually unanimous agreement amongst everybody that texting is the worst of the worst distraction, and we have to start someplace, and that's a good place to start.
It seems to me, let me start by playing some sound of Kate Moore. Iowa happens to be the home of the U.S. National Texting Champion, Kate Moore. She's a 16-year-old sophomore from Des Moines. She testified before the House subcommittee, which you were on last month, and she told lawmakers that she sometimes sends up to 400 texts a day, however, never while driving. Let's listen to her.
Knowing the hot gossip around school that your best friend just texted you can wait. Any text message can wait. There's no rational reason to text and take away your concentration from the road. For the quick second that you take to read a text message could be the quick second that you swerve out of your lane or sideswipe another car or, even worse, hit somebody head on.
Now, she mentioned the hot gossip at school, and your legislation only restricts texting, doing the actual punching of the, you know, the message. But if Kate, and she wouldn't, but a friend of hers picks up, sees that hot gossip from school, isn't there going to be a natural inclination to want to respond? So if you don't also restrict reading the text message, are you just sort of setting these kids or adults up for failure? Because, I mean, that's the whole excitement about texting, is that it's immediate.
Anytime you draft any bill, you know, there's always a starting point and an ending point. What can you achieve with the give and take of the legislative process that you know it has a very good chance of passing? The bill that we have before us now with the sending the message and typing the message, even though it does not include the reading the message, this is something that I think will have very good support, and I think I'm very optimistic for passage. So it goes, you have to start someplace. And every bill, you know, if all we had to do for traffic safety is to simply pass a law, you know, we'd already be the safest. You have to get the motoring public convinced that this is the reasonable thing to do. You have to get those folks that are driving, operating motor vehicles to change those habits that we know, based on studies, can be very detrimental to public safety.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. I'm speaking with Representative Dave Jepke. He's a Republican from Gowrie. He's the ranking member of the House Transportation Committee. We're talking about the bill that would ban sending a text message while driving, which could be up for debate as early as tomorrow or Wednesday. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-866-780-9100. Again, that number, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk to Troy in Iowa City. Troy, thanks for calling The Exchange.
Oh, I want to know why you think Iowans can't do two things at once. I think you can drive and chew bubble gum at the same time, but maybe you can't. But let's get to the real issue. What you're just trying to save Iowans' lives, right, from driving? Well, why don't you just pass everyone who drives a car or inside a car should wear a motorcycle helmet? That would save a lot more lives than, what's this ban texting?
All right. Well, you know, I think Troy's trying to make the point that you could go much farther and have a bigger impact. Is this really necessary?
Well, you can pass all kinds of laws, and that doesn't always solve the problem. You need to pass laws that the public will accept as reasonable and responsible. Another interesting component of this bill, and it's a very critical component of this bill, is that for the first year, there will not be any citations issued. There will just be warning tickets issued. And the reason for that is because of the educational component of this. If you remember when several years ago when they passed the a child safety seat law, they did the very same thing. There's a period of time that we need to pass all kinds of public service announcements and education update the curriculum and driver's education to get people aware of the fact that this is the law. So there's a process. You don't just simply pass a law and boom, instantly you have a miraculous, response from all that. It's a process, and you have to start someplace in a reasonable sense, and I think that's the approach we're taking.
And I should mention that under the bill, if you were charged with texting while driving, and as you said, it wouldn't happen in the first year, you'd just be warned. But after the second year, the citation would be a $30 fine, is my understanding. Now, if it's the cause of an accident that results in serious injury or death, those penalties go up substantially, and there's a loss of license.
Yes, that's correct. If it can be proven that you were driving while texting and that is a specific reason or the cause of a serious injury accident, you will be subject to a fine up to $500, and you can lose your driving privilege for up to 90 days. If the same circumstances result in a death, then you can lose your license for as long as 180 days and also up to a $1,000 fine.
Is there already a penalty for distracted driving? I mean, could this fall under current legislation as is currently if somebody caused an accident doing this? Is this more of a heightening the awareness of it?
There's always been an argument that said, well, you don't really need to do this because we have a reckless driving, we have careless driving. But if you take the reckless driving, for instance, the reckless driving requires a willful and wanton disregard. Mm-hmm. And if you go back in court rulings, that's a difficult charge to prove. The courts have established a pretty high threshold. If this is an actual court case where somebody ran a stop sign and caused an accident, the individual was charged with reckless driving. The Supreme Court held that that alone is not reckless driving. So you can see where the threshold is very high. Also on the area of the passing texting bill is for purposes what we've learned from the past when we instituted laws relative to seat belts. First, they tried just strictly an educational concept, and they passed or did a lot of public service announcement, that sort of thing, and then they did surveys after that to see the effectiveness of those public service announcements. And the effect initially was virtually zero. Once the legislature passed a law that said, you need to buckle up, then suddenly the surveys revealed a much higher compliance and effectiveness. So the same concept applies here. It's until you specifically identify that texting while driving is a violation, you will not, chances are you will not achieve that level of compliance.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to go straight to the phones. We're going to speak with Jim and Jack, who've been waiting on the line. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio as we discuss distracted driving, texting while driving, new possible requirements for teenage drivers, including an earlier curfew. Weigh in when we come back on The Exchange. On Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and as promised, we're going to go to the phone lines now. We're talking about legislation that would ban sending a text message while driving. Our number, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Jim is on the line from Perry. Jim, what do you think about this possible ban? Jim, can you hear us? We're having trouble with Jim. Let's check in with Jack. Jack is calling from Des Moines. Jack, what do you think about a possible legislation to ban texting while driving?
I completely agree with it. I think it's well overdue. I think this legislation is plenty strong. I think that's quite all right for somebody to read a text message while driving. But my main concern is, how would you enforce such a law? I mean, would it only be if someone got in an accident or did a concerned citizen call in on someone that they see texting while driving?
And that's a really good question. I want to ask that. But Jim or Jack, you made an interesting point. You think it's okay to read a text while you're driving. Tell me why.
Yeah, if an emergency situation comes up or what have you, and you get a text message, I think that the appropriate thing to do would be to call back if need through, or just wait until you get to a secure location to text the person back.
But if it's an emergency and you're driving and reading, you don't think that would be a bit distracting?
No, it only takes a brief second, and oftentimes if I'm reading a text message while I'm driving, I'll keep the phone up so I can see the road at the same time.
All right, you're a better driver than I am. I got to tell you, that print's too small for me. But let me, you make a very good question. You have a very good question about enforcement. Let's ask Representative David Jepkes, because you're a retired state trooper. How do you enforce this? And I know they asked the same question initially when the seatbelt law was passed, because they were thinking, well, how will you see that as you drive by? How will they enforce this?
Yes, and that's maybe the most frequently asked question. But you have to look at enforcement in a broader context than a police officer just issuing you a citation. Enforcement or getting compliance is done in many ways. That's why most law enforcement agencies have public education officers and safety education officers, because if they don't educate the public to what they should or should not be doing relative for safe driving habits, then people don't really know the difference. So that's why it's so important that we're addressing the education aspect of it, that first year of warnings only, and to also the main emphasis in that period of time will be for the driver education curriculum for the driver training people to stress that point to folks that are learning to drive. Then the other end of that spectrum gets to be, once you do have an accident, then of course an officer can pull those records, and if he can tie the time frame to specifically the time of the accident, then he has the reason for filing a complaint. So there's also, and we get this from the National Highway Safety Council, because many other states have the same challenge, and they are coming up with different techniques and different ways of, I trust our law enforcement agencies to be creative in this area, and I think law enforcement will definitely figure that out.
All right, we're going to take one more call on this, and then I want to kind of change gears a little bit, but let's talk to Bill in Sac City. Bill, thanks for calling the Exchange this morning.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for taking my call. And with my thoughts on it, to do only the sending and not legislating against the receiving, it really needs to be both. Otherwise, it's virtually unenforceable. How are you going to discern between the two as far as enforcement? Secondly, the science behind it, and more importantly, Virginia Tech and MIT have shown that the real problem, it's the brain being engaged in something other than driving that creates the problem. And I think we'd be better off doing nothing rather than doing just a half bill. And so often legislators don't understand the science behind it, or really don't read the science behind it. And I really think that they need to do that and consider the real source of the problem, and that is the brain engagement in a process other than the driving.
Thanks for your call, Bill. I want to use Bill's question to jump to another topic, and then we're going to jump again. But why not restrictions on cell phone use? I know that's something that the body has looked at but has been hesitant to adopt. There has been some studies that show driving while talking on the cell phone is as distracting or as dangerous as driving while intoxicated. Is there just a lack of support for that, since so many adults, including lawmakers, do it?
Yes, relative to the question or comments of the previous caller, we've had in-depth testimony from safety groups and studies from the University of Iowa, and all this has been taken into consideration. And you have to weigh all the testimony that comes in. Kate was maybe our star witness, but we also had testimony from the chief of the Iowa State Patrol. We had testimony from the professor from the University of Iowa. We had testimony from the National Highway Safety Council. So we've taken all that into consideration. And the main thing is to be, if you pass a law that people just discard and don't want to comply with, then you have a problem. Also, the folks from AT&T visited with us and offered this idea that you basically have a right now kind of a window of opportunity to do something on texting, because once that genie gets fully out of the bottle, you really have a problem. And that, I think, is the problem with trying to enact something now with cell phones, because virtually everybody has a cell phone. Virtually everybody uses a cell phone in one manner or another. My local newspaper, the Fort Dodge Messenger, did an excellent editorial the other day, and they said, just turn all the phones and stuff off and drive. And that's an excellent point. However, reality tells you it's not quite that simple.
Before we move on, Stephen in Cambridge, I'm just going to paraphrase his question. He wanted to know how the texting ban might affect UPS drivers. But as I remember in subcommittee, there were exemptions made for service providers that use sort of devices to tell them where to go or talk to, you know, headquarters or those kinds of things.
The definition of texting while driving is very important in the bill. And we specifically included language that states, you know, global positioning device is not construed as texting. So you get those different components. And that, I think, a little bit of the part of the, you know, the reading. You have to, it's easy to say ban texting while driving, but someplace along the line, you have to identify what is texting. And that maybe took more time than anything in drafting this bill.
Who's been sitting at the table with us, Democratic Senator Bill Heckroth of Waverly, a member of the Senate Transportation Committee. And we're going to talk a lot about the legislation that you've adopted in the Senate and sent to the House. But before we do that, what is your feel on this texting ban that may come over from the House as early as this week? Will the Senate be on board with that?
I think so. Actually, there is an amendment that's already drafted in the Senate that will be adding the reading portion to this bill. Whether that has enough support to get passed in the Senate, I don't know, and whether it does and goes back to the House, whether it can stay there. But I know that the concern has been brought up by the several senators that, it goes back to the temptation. If I read a text, aren't I going to naturally want to respond right away? And so it's almost like we're asking for violation of the law, and we don't think that's a wise thing to do.
Is it your amendment?
It's mine and Senator Apple, Stacey Apple.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if that comes back, Representative Jepkes, with that amendment on, and I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, we have to get it through the House first, but if that legislation would happen, do you think that that there's a compromise can be made? Or
we always review the bills if they come back in a different form. It would, again, have to go back through the committee, and it would be something we deal with as it come back.
All right. We're going to take a quick break in just a few minutes and switch gears and talk about graduated driver's licenses for teenagers and some new restrictions adopted in the Senate for those. Also want to talk about legislation requiring seatbelt use for teenagers. But let me just ask you, do you see parallels? I know you've talked about that, between the texting ban and the seatbelt law. Talk to me about how compliance has grown dramatically over the course of the last, has it been 20, 30 years? How long has that seatbelt law been in effect now?
I think it's
I'm putting you on the spot there.
About 15, 20 years. And I think the key to the compliance again,
I mean, it's
is
80, 90% now.
Yes, it's the education.
And so do you think we could see similar compliance eventually with texting if this ban were adopted?
Yes, I do. And again, I alluded earlier to the child safety seats. You know, if you look in the paper, there's hardly ever a citation issued to anybody that does not comply with that law. Again, it goes back to the education component, and that's what's so critical a part of this bill.
All right. Senator Heckroth, anything to add before we take a quick break?
No, I think the representative answered it.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to broaden the conversation to talk about teenage drivers and whether they are safe as they should be, whether they make the roads unsafe for the rest of us. We're going to add some people to the conversation. The director of the Center for Advocacy and Outreach at Blank Hospital, Kathy Leggett's going to join us. Also a researcher from North Carolina to talk about what other states have done and how Iowa measures up. That is coming up on The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Thank you. Good afternoon. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and we are live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. My guests this afternoon, Democratic Senator Bill Heckroth of Waverly, a member of the Senate Transportation Committee. Also joining us now, the director of the Center for Advocacy and Outreach at Blank Children's Hospital, Kathy Leggett, and senior research scientist and director for the Center of Study of Young Drivers and the Highway Safety Research Center at the University of North Carolina, Rob Foss. Thank you both, all three of you, for being on with us. I want to talk about Senate File 2150, which requires teenagers with immediate driver's licenses to remain accident ticket free for a full year, as opposed to the current GDL, as we call it, graduated driver's license requirement of 6 months. Also, this legislation would require 16 and 17 year olds to be off the road by 11 instead of 12:30. And it would limit a number of teenage passengers to one in the vehicle unless a mom and dad or a legal guardian is along for the ride. I want to start with Mr. Foss and just ask you, how does that compare to graduated driver's license laws in other states?
The one you just described, as far as I understand it, would make Iowa one of the best, most comprehensive driver licensing systems. It's not really appropriate to call this a law. It's putting in place a process by which we license young drivers in a way that's been documented to be quite successful and reduce crashes dramatically.
What do you see across the spectrum of states? How many states have this kind of tiered license system, and is it effective?
Well, the only state that really has nothing of the sort, I won't name, there's one state.
You can name them.
I don't want to point fingers at them. There are 49 states, the District of Columbia, all have grad licensing systems. And Iowa was one of the very early states to do this back in 1999. But at the time the current system was designed in Iowa, we didn't know nearly so much as we do about young drivers now. And over the years, other states that have come on later have gotten a more comprehensive system in place, or else states have upgraded the ones they had. And as I understand it, that's what's going on in Iowa right now, is trying to come into the modern era of what we understand. To answer your question point blank, a really good grad licensing system will reduce 16-year-old driver crashes by close to 40% and 17-year-old crashes by close to 20%.
That's substantial.
It is.
If that's the case, has that been the result in other states?
It has. We found it in North Carolina. We found it, other researchers found it in Georgia. And there are a couple of, almost two dozen studies now that have looked at various state systems, and the more comprehensive your system, the more your system effectively addresses what are known to be young driver risks and what is known about how teens learn to drive.
And that's what I, let me ask you
benefit.
About that, because mm-hmm. you mentioned that we've learned more as these laws have been adopted, which has forcing Iowa to go back and look and see if they have the right policy. What have we learned about teenage drivers that says we should change our law?
Well, see, one of the things we learned since 99 is how effective this comprehensive form of licensing is. In 99, when Iowa did this, we had no data from any state in the U.S. because the first system really went into effect in 97. So we've learned how effective it is. One of the other things that we've learned is how long it takes for a beginning young driver to get really good, meaning to get as good as they're likely to be. And it takes 2 to 3 years of actual driving. And that's what GDL is meant to do, is to give them lots and lots and lots of practical driving experience, but at the same time not expose them to the risks that go along with being a novice more than is necessary. That's why you have that limit on how late at night teens can drive, because after 10 o'clock, a teen driver fatality is three times as likely as it is earlier in the day. And that's the same thing with the passenger restriction with more than one passenger, the likelihood of a fatality is essentially doubled.
Wow, that's significant as well. Let me bring Kathy Leggett on, a director for Center for Advocacy and Outreach at Blank Children's Hospital. People say, well, why does the hospital care about graduated driver's licenses?
Well, we care very much because, number one, if you look at the deaths to teens in Iowa, 48% of them are motor vehicle crashes, ages 14 to 17. And so that's the primary age that we're talking about, and that is huge. And knowing what graduated driver's license systems can do, we definitely want to see some steps put in place to help reduce those fatalities and then the injuries that go along that we're not even showing, you know, in that graph to our teenagers. Also, being a children's hospital, we see the other end of it when we do have the teens into the emergency department and hospitalized for month after month because of injuries that they sustained. And we always feel when there's something, especially as successful as this, that we can do to prevent that, that we want to advocate for that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bill Heckroth of Waverly, you ran this legislation on the floor. Tell me why you believe it's important to have the additional requirements for teen drivers, the longer period before they get their full license, the limitation on passengers, the earlier time and when they have to be off the road. And Kathy, you pointed out to me during the break that it's important when we say curfew, they can't be behind the wheel. Doesn't mean Tommy has to be home by 11, but he shouldn't be the one driving after 11.
Correct. And it's really just for that 12-month period that they're on their intermediate license. So they just need to be riding with somebody who is not on that 12-month intermediate period.
All right. Senator Heckroth?
And I think, you know, we had a lot of information presented to us. And I think anytime you focus on how can we give the teenage drivers more experience and reduce their risk, those are the types of things we want to look at. So especially here in Iowa, let's take, for instance, going from a 6-month period to a 12-month period. I mean, here in Iowa, we've got four seasons. And as we've certainly found out the last few months, a couple of those seasons can be awfully dangerous. So previously, you could get your your intermediate license, say April 1st, and never have to drive through the ice and the snow of Iowa. And that just didn't make sense, number one. And so we thought that was a good idea. And I guess one of the things I look back is to when I was a young driver. And I can tell you that the more, you know, my friends that I had in the car with me, the more stupid things I did as a driver, you know. And I don't think kids have changed that much. And so I think anytime we can restrict it. Now, one of the things that is, we've talked before, it's give and take in this business. And so one of the things that we gave on was if I'm taking siblings with me, if I'm driving my brothers and sisters to school, that's not restricted. So it's just that non-family person that is really restricted on that type of thing.
And a lot of these come from moms and dads who say they don't necessarily want to pick up the kids and take them to and from school, right, or maybe don't have the time to do that. One of the complaints made during debate, I want to play some sound now from Senator Merlin Bartz, who's a Republican from Grafton, and he argued that the earlier curfew would penalize students who participate in extracurricular activities, saying that sometimes the pep bus doesn't get home by 11, and I think he's saying, I don't want to have to go to the school and pick up my daughter. Let's listen to Senator Bartz.
As a parent of a 16-year-old that's currently running on an intermediate license and involved as a cheerleader and track and speech and drama and living in a district, you know, some of these school districts have literally hundreds of square miles where the ride home after the bus gets home might be an additional 40 minutes. What are we saying? Are we replacing the parental parameters that many of us have lived under? You know, that parental parameters that when you're 16, you're supposed to be home by midnight. I mean, that was basically mine, and I bet most of you, probably your parents had that same parental parameter. Midnight was probably the cutoff point. Are we replacing those parental parameters with the paterfamilias state, the nanny state, which says that parental decisions don't matter anymore? We're going to override those decisions as a state, and we're going to say that, by God, it doesn't matter whether your parents want you home at 12 p.m., it's going to be 11. Maybe we should have consulted the movie industry, because they're certainly going to need to move all of their movie schedules up, because a 9:30 movie in Mason City means that my 16-year-old has to get up in the middle of it to make it by 11 o'clock.
He makes a couple of interesting points, and I want to start with the second one, with his concern that it's a nanny state, that we're telling kids they have to be home by 11. Now, I know that, Kathy, you said it's not a true curfew. They can be out past that if they're not driving, but if parents aren't willing to pick you up at 11:30 or midnight, have you not, in a sense, set the curfew earlier just because if there's no other way home, they've got to drive. I mean,
yeah, unless they've got, you know, a friend that's already through that 1 year period.
Or they live down the street.
And the other thing, again, if it's a school activity or work activity, there's waivers that we've actually had in place, only it's been a 12:30 time instead of 11. So, you know, if I'm a parent and I think that my child's going to get home late on the team bus or something, I just get that waiver done in advance, have the school sign it. You know, yes, it's going to take a little different approach maybe and a little pre-thought, a little anticipation. But I think, you know, as we work through it, it's certainly going to be workable.
Let me ask you about those waivers, because Senator Bartz had some concern. I know there is a waiver for school activities or for employment.
Right.
Are they not having kids of driving age? Is it something you have to get for every event? Is it for an entire school year? Are they difficult to get the principal to sign? Kathy, what do you know about these waivers?
Actually, the schools generally have them there, mm-hmm. and then they're also available online. It's through the DOT, and you can sign it for a whole season. It's not per event at all. And so, if you were anticipating working the whole year, then you can sign it. For that that period and for the, you know, the whole school season as well. So
all right, I want to get your opinion, listeners. What do you think about new restrictions for teenage drivers? Will they make them safer, or is this impeding on your parental voice? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. David's been on the line from Marriott. David, thanks for calling the Exchange.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. I'm neither a parent nor am I a teen. I'm 67. I raced motorcycles and I now drive a commercial vehicle, so I am aware of the lack of attention and what it does if one's driving. When I was young, I grew up having to have what is called in England an L plate on the car or motorcycle, a 8x8 plastic white with a red L, so everybody in the road knew that I was a learner, and therefore they were aware that I might not be so competent, on top of which I had to have a qualified driver with a full license beside me. So that was just a suggestion. I wanted to make a quick comment about texting. I could cut it down to very simply, it's dangerous. Stop it. And that's it. The other day, I thought I'd experiment, so I made a cell phone for my semi on a road that was fairly clear of traffic, and I called a friend and asked him to text me, and I said I would text him back. Well, it was a salutary experience, and I certainly wouldn't want to do it again. And I actually have to admire people who can do this while they drive and still stay alive and not kill people, but I still think it's an extremely dangerous practice.
Thank you, David, so much for the call, and no more testing your abilities then. No more experimenting. Let me take one more quick call before we get back to the conversation. Lynn in Sioux Rapids. Lynn, thanks for calling the Exchange.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to give my opinion about both of the restrictions. I have a 16-year-old son who is a sophomore, so he's actually ahead of most of his classmates as far as his driver's license, and he is on the 1-year restricted license. And there's a lot of times after basketball games where they'll get together at friends' homes, and he has an opportunity to go, and he's home by 12:30, or he'll deliver his friends home because he, you know, can drive. Up until 12:30, and also our school district is huge. I don't know if it was Senator Bartz mentioned that it could cover several square miles. You know, from Albert City to Peterson is almost an hour drive, and so students getting done with activities and having to drive home. I guess I'm against both of them. I'm against the restriction of only one child in the vehicle because a lot of times they'll carpool over to baseball practice, and also being home at 11 o'clock. That's really restrictive.
Have you used the waiver, Lynn? Have you I've not used it myself. Is it easy to use? Is it difficult? Have you tried it yet?
We did not use the waiver because I don't believe that it has that it applies to my child.
Okay, for maybe school activities at least, though.
Well, he's 16, so
okay.
So he has his full. I guess he has his. I don't know the exact term of it, but he's in his graduated license period, I believe, until he's 17. Isn't that correct?
Senator Heckroth, go ahead.
Now it's the six-month graduated license, so, and that's what we changed was 12 months. And, yes, it starts when you're 16, so, you know, we'll sit within 6 months.
But could he apply for the waiver to go to school functions and be out past 12:30?
Right now, again, it's 12:30. Yes, okay. So he had to work after 12:30 or before 5, the waiver would still be appropriate today.
So, Lynn, you haven't needed the waiver yet because he's usually home by 12:30 is what you're saying.
Yes, yes, that's correct.
All right.
But, you know, it's 20-some miles up to Spencer to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like the other senator said on when he was saying, you know, if they go to a late movie, 11 o'clock, they would not make it home in time.
Yeah, and there's no waiver for that.
Nor would he be able to take more than one child.
Sure. All right. Thank you for your opinion, Lynn. Appreciate your call today.
Thank you.
All right. What are you hearing from parents? I know, Kathy Leggett, that there was at least one survey by the Department of Transportation, and I don't know if you've seen it, or maybe Senator Heckroth, you've seen it, that they suggested that parents were largely supportive of more restrictions on teenage drivers.
I can address that. Yes, actually, it was a survey that conducted by the University of Iowa, and with help, at least creating the survey from the University of North Carolina, and conducted by an organization trained to do traffic safety surveys. And it was done in October. We did survey 1,065 parents in Iowa of 16 and 17-year-olds. And it's really important that we did that group because there really is nobody more qualified to talk about how anything would affect them, how any of these proposals would affect them, than that group of parents. They're living it. They know more about it than anybody else at this time. So the other thing I'd like to mention about that is that we did a stratified sample so that we did a third of the parents from the most rural counties, a third of the parents from the middle-sized counties, and a third of the parents from the urban counties, because we wanted to be able to assess if there were differences between rural and urban parents. And in regard to the nighttime limitation, actually that had the highest support from parents. It was 82% of the parents, no matter whether they were urban or rural, supported actually a 10 p.m. nighttime limitation as long as their kids could get their waivers for work and for school activities. So across the board, they were very supportive of this. Parents were also highly supportive of the passenger limitation at 1, with having the ability to take your family members. 79% of the parents supported that. And really highest support for those, both of those measures were for 12 months. And then additional maybe around the 20% for till they're 18.
Wow.
And so really across the board, a lot of support for these proposals.
Rob Foss, who is a research and director of the Center of Study of Young Drivers and Highway Safety Research Center at the University of North Carolina, you've been listening to this discussion, Mr. Foss. What do you glean from it?
Well, you gave an awful heavy play to extreme minority positions. A number of the points that Senator Bartz raised were off the mark. He was criticizing what isn't being proposed. And did not reflect what Kathy just said, which is that parents in Iowa hugely support this. And I can tell you, both from research we've done and research that others have done, you find that every single state where you talk to parents of teen drivers, whether you talk to them before their teen has gone into a licensing system like this, or when you talk to them after they've been through it, and what you tend to find is that parents whose teen has been through one of these things with all the alleged inconveniences, parents like it more than they do before they've gone into it. And I think that's because parents see firsthand just how very long it takes their child to become a good enough driver that the parent feels comfortable with their teen being out there. On this, in North Carolina, we have a 9 p.m. night restriction, have since 97. We asked parents after the fact, after their teen had been through it, is that too long? Is that long enough? Is it about right? 88% said it's about right. More people said it's not long enough than said it's too long. So, you know, I think what you're hearing from the occasional parent that objects to this, I think you're hearing a lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is, look, I'm thinking convenience. I'm not thinking, what can I do to protect my child from the thing that's most likely to kill him or her? There is nothing in the lives of most young people in this country that will ever be so dangerous as this first 18 to 36 months of beginning to drive or riding with somebody. That's one of the things that hasn't been mentioned here, is that when a teen driver makes a mistake, isn't paying attention, makes a bad judgment, they may run into your granddaughter. They may run into you and kill your spouse or your child.